It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text. 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, serving Mobile since 1939, Alabama Ooh, Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
That's a long time.
They've been around a while,
39.
Isn't it?
Yeah, because I was born in a year before that. So I know how long they've been around.
So, yeah. You know, so we're.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm going to talk a little bit about Ed's after a while and Peace, mm-hmm. Love, and Tacos.
Yep.
And that's undoubtedly is a fabulous deal going on over there because we had the occasion to go over Saturday and partake.
Good.
And it is awesome. It's a good deal. So we got a caller on there.
We do have a caller. Let's see who we got here. Caller, you with us?
Yes.
Hey.
Yeah, I got a 07 F-150 with a 5.4. And I have 147,000 miles on it. And I had my transmission filter flush and everything done at 100,000. Mm-hmm. Is it still safe for me to do another change at around the 150 mark, or is that too high, too long of an interval?
Well, if you had not had it done at the 100,000 mark, I would say yes. But since you've had it done at 100,000, no, it's perfectly fine. You know, are you having any kind of issues with it now?
About a month ago, it happened twice that when it would. If it downshifted from overdrive, it had a shutter. It did that twice, and it's never done it again.
Right, right. You know, if it's a shutter issue, sometimes a fluid change will correct it. There's additives in the fluid that is there for like friction modifiers. That's there for that. That do deplete themselves over time. I would definitely go ahead and have it changed. Make sure they're using the correct fluid for that vehicle, and see what it does for it. If it was slipping or doing something more drastic than that, you know, a fluid change is not going to fix it. You know, but you know, if you're talking about like a slight converter shutter or something like that. One of the things we're doing to fix a converter shutter with our 8-speeds right now is changing to a updated synthetic mobile transmission fluid with them, and it's curing them. You know, I was a skeptic at first, but it's done a good job. You know, we really haven't had any problems with them since we've been changing to the new fluid. So.
When I go to the shop, maybe ask them to go with a synthetic instead of a traditional, or
not necessarily. I would have them make sure they're using the correct fluid for your truck. So, if it calls for a synthetic fluid, yes, absolutely use it. If not, not necessarily. You know, I'm not a big fan of changing type of fluids if it's built for a certain type.
Well, what you were talking about there, though, is those vehicles already built with for synthetic fluid, right?
Right. Well, they actually came with synthetic fluid, but there was a problem with the fluid early on, and they changed the formula, and it's corrected the issues since then. But
now another question. Let me interrupt you for a second. Don't they make a shutter paste that you can add to, or an additive that you could add to that fluid?
Yeah, and it's not really a paste. It's just an additive. It's a friction modifier.
Okay.
I've used it in the older transmissions.
I've used it too.
Had really good luck with it.
Yeah.
You know,
is that the Lucas?
Lucas has some, and there's some that just comes in a little red tube, called Shutter Stop.
Shutter Stop.
And I've used it many times over the years, and it has done a very good job.
Right.
So all it is just a concentrate of the friction modifiers that's in your fluid already.
Yeah, it's a different viscosity package that is in there. They already have some of that in those products. But same thing we do with the oils now. When you get oil, it's not straight oil. It has 3 or 4 or 5, maybe 10 different viscosity packages of specific items that are added to that lubricant to make it sustain the work that it's doing.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, well, I appreciate y'all's help.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. But and back to we were talking, I guess, a little bit about UJ before we got to
Where are we at? Do y'all have any downline info as to potential increase in shipments, or are we still worried about chips, or et cetera, et cetera?
Chips are still a problem. And my understanding is the chip manufacturers are catching up or have caught up, but to get them moved downstream into the hands of the electronics manufacturers and then get that stuff moved towards, you know, the finished product and to the builders of the vehicles, we're still months down the road before all that happens.
Let's clarify something. Mm-hmm. I didn't stop to realize this. I was thinking, okay, they made a chip, it come down the assembly line, it fell into a box at the end of the line, mm-hmm. boom, it went on FedEx and whatever, bang, it's the next day it's at the plant. Mm-hmm. Well, no. It's got mm-hmm. to go to the supplier that is building the piece of equipment and or accessory
right.
that is activated by that chip.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's got to be tested and checked out, make sure it's right. Then they're going to ship that piece to the factory to get in the assembly
line. Right.
So it's not just a 24-hour deal.
No, it's not like, okay, we got the part built and we're going to ship it to GM or Ford or Chrysler.
Right, right.
And we're going to plug it into the new car and boom, we're all back to
production. We still have a process that has to be completed
and you know, GM has not shut down as much as some other manufacturers. I know Ford
Ford's down until June.
GM has cut back quite a bit, but they're still pumping out some vehicles. They're trickling in. I mean, I can't say that they're coming in fast enough for our liking, but they are coming in, and we do have a few.
Everybody's got their hands out. I mean, look, I was in a collision repair center the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I walked in, and this guy's, you know, I mean, he's about ready to throw the phone up against the wall. He's got five people there just wanting to drop their cars off, but they all want rental cars.
Well, you can't get one.
And it's not only not available, they can't even tell them when one will be available.
Right.
Because everybody that's got the cars knows they can't get another one. So they don't care. They can't. They're hanging on to them. They're not turning them in.
Right. Well, you know, and I heard something the other day, you know, back when the pandemic started, a lot of the rental and all your airlines shut down and the cruise ships shut down and all your traveling quit.
They didn't need them.
Well, there was a bunch of rental cars sitting there. Well, okay, they sold, you know, most rental companies sold those rental cars to thin the fleet out and keep afloat, you know, exactly what they needed to do.
They never pay for those cars. I mean, those cars are, I don't know, that's above my pay grade.
Right.
But I would think it's some kind of sophisticated lease situation that they are allowed to keep those vehicles through some financial backing. Mm-hmm. For a period of time, for a certain amount of miles, and then they have to be pulled out of service and sold.
Right. And you know, they sold off the majority of their fleet. Well, okay, now
they can't get
now that everything is kind of cranked back up, they can't get cars because cars can't be built. You know?
Well, yeah, we don't have any chips.
Right. And I've actually heard that a lot some of them have actually resorted to buying late model used vehicles.
Oh,
and
really?
My guess is probably some of their old rental fleet back.
Probably. You know? Buy them back,
And
put them back in line. Put them back in line
and rent them again.
I'll
you
be
know?
Darned.
It's,
okay.
You know, it's really strange times, you know, when it comes down to having to do that. But, you know, people do what they have to do. They'll figure out a way to make business work, you know. Our new vehicle sales may be down, but our usage is up. And our service is up because, you know, the people that have vehicles have to keep them going.
Well,
you know,
that's right. And, you know, and all that being said, now we're going into the summer months, schools
mm-hmm.
finishing up, everybody's graduating or quituating or whatever they want to call it, or however it happened this year, you know, and it's been a mess. But now they know. Well, here you go again. They know they can't. Let me stop and start again. In the past, we have a large number of automobile owners that didn't worry about having a up-to-date new vehicle to drive around in every day. What they would do is they had, well, I would call it egg beater, you know, a car that moves from point A to point B and takes care of everything, and they own it. They don't have a lot of money invested in it, and they drive that around, and they get ready to go on vacation in the summer. They call and book them a lease car, a rental car.
Right.
And ride. Right. Well, they can't do that now.
Right.
So they're having to run out and buy whatever used car they can find.
Yep.
And then do that. And or they bring them to the dealerships like yourself, and they get those cars serviced and ready roadworthy.
Right. Which is probably going to lead to a lot more breakdowns on vacation, which there's nothing any more miserable than breaking down out of town.
Oh, yeah, yes. So,
which was the one advantage to getting a rental car. But
right.
Anyway, it sounds like it's time for us to take a break. We're going to let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll get back into that when we get back.
Hey.
Daddy drives an 18-wheeler, and they sure miss him when he's gone.
Yeah, they do.
Ah, but he calls them every night and tells them that he loves them. He taught them this song to sing. Roll on highway, roll on.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
He's found it down.
Yeah, well, welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text. And speaking of calls, we do have Carl on the line with us. Carl, are you with me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, what can we do for you tonight?
All right. And I've got a couple of questions on this old 84 Chevrolet I got. I bought the truck, and somebody before me has put a V8 in it that had a six-cylinder.
Okay.
And the wire and everything on it looked like rat nest. Where I spliced all these wires and everything together.
Yeah.
If I bought a wiring harness, would I be able to change it out with too much problem? You should be able to.
You know, the trick is finding the harness for that truck. And if I was you, I would buy, you know, it breaks at the bulkhead, which is the firewall.
Right.
And you can actually buy the piece that goes from the firewall forward. And if you buy the harness for a V8 truck, it should be plug and play. You should be able to plug it up to the firewall, and then it should lay out and plug up to everything on the V8 motor. I mean, there's.
Well, I would need the wiring harness and that plate that goes on the firewall.
Well, it should be part of the harness, you know, because you don't actually have to take the bulkhead loose at the firewall or from the firewall. You just take the underhood harness loose from the firewall, okay? One bolt right in the middle should unplug, and then that's your whole harness for the front part of the truck. It's going to include your headlights, your engine harness, and all that stuff for up front, everything in the front part of the truck.
Right now, the truck's running and everything, but I don't have no electricity. The only thing that works is my brake light.
Yeah.
Is that part of it?
Well, and it's possible. I mean, now without really getting in there and checking it, it's hard to say, you know. And honestly, I don't know why you would have to butcher up the harness to change to a V8. I did something very similar to I had a 79 Chevrolet truck that was originally six-cylinder, changed it to V8. I bought the original fan shroud and stuff to make it, make everything fit, got the right brackets, bolted it in, and it was pretty much a plug-and-play deal. I had to, you know, move the starter wires around a little bit and the battery wire around a little bit. But other than that, it was pretty simple.
And let me ask y'all a question. Mm-hmm. You both of you guys are involved in this. that reckon the guy that did this had any problem and maybe changed some of the fittings on the wiring harness, and all on, and maybe even changed the fittings on the motor phase of it too, so that they would fit the wiring harness on the truck.
Yeah. I mean, it's
if it did, it's gonna be hard to for a non technician to do that.
Well, and my thing is that's why I'm saying get the piece from the firewall out,
okay,
for the V8 truck and buy it, you know, just when you tell them what all it has and that it is a V8 truck, not a six-cylinder.
Okay.
And everything should be plug and play from there.
Okay, so, all right.
So
well,
I
was just thinking about it because I was imagining doing it myself and considering the areas that I would run into that would present a problem.
Right. Now, that's assuming that everything inside the truck has not been messed with. So, you know, if it's been messed with, then you may have to do the inside harness, which, you know, is not the end of the world either, but it's a little more complicated because you're up under the dash and you're hooking to a bunch of different things, you know. But you should be able to do that. You know, now General Motors is not going to have that harness. You're going to have to go through somebody like LMC Truck or Brother Truck, you know, somebody that has a reproduction harness for it. But their stuff is pretty true to form.
Yeah, they sell some good products.
They build some quality pieces.
Right, they do. Yeah.
So I think you'd be happy with that.
I've got a magazine coming on. I'm gonna restore the truck.
Yeah.
A lot of good things to it, and I got a magazine coming. So I want to have a new sinker thing put in it.
Yeah.
And on the transmission,
mm-hmm.
I had a wild hair. I was wanting to drive it. I was around the yard a little bit and up the road. So before I got all put in my name and everything, I got in the truck, cranked it up, and turned like, and then I went put it in gear. It, you know how it sounds like when you linkage or something comes loose and it hits the muffler or something, it'll sting.
Yeah.
Well, I went and put Sting in the deer and it made that sound and it won't go forward or reverse or anything.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, it's I would first make sure the linkage is still connected properly when you put
it
in park.
Come off.
Yeah, make sure when it's in park, it actually is in park, and if you go to neutral, it frees up and rolls, so you know you're at least moving the manual linkage on it.
Right.
At that point, you know, it's one thing about those transmissions is pretty simple. If it's got fluid in it and it is working and you manually move that manual lever, it should move. Yeah. So
but when I bought the truck, one of the first things I noticed, I checked it out pretty good and it had all transmission oil, motor oil and everything. But when I looked up under the truck there was a puddle of oil, transmission fluid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can see a gasket hanging out of the oil pan.
Right.
Well, I drove the truck home, and then I replaced the oil pan gasket and all that on it.
Right.
And it had oil and everything, but, you know, it wasn't going to get or anything.
Yeah.
Surely you topped it back off.
Yeah, and I assume you topped it back off with fluid and all that.
Oh, yeah, I put the oil it was supposed to be in the transmission.
Right. Did you have the filter off of it and change it?
I changed all the filters and everything when I put the new oil pan gasket on.
Yeah. I don't know. That's kind of a – I don't know what could have gone wrong there. I mean, if the pan was clean when you dropped it, it shouldn't have hurt anything. Now, I've seen them where the pan was loaded up with material, and you drop the pan, put a new fluid in it, and
metal
it
shavings.
Just never moves again. You know?
Right. Well, there wasn't no metal shavings or anything. I mean, just a little bit of wear.
Right.
And there was no metal shavings or anything in the bottom of the oil pan when I changed it.
Well, it was clean.
It was okay, just having wear in it, but that was it.
Right. No, I don't know what to tell you on that one. Like I say, if it's full of fluid and it's, you know, drive shaft's hooked up and the manual linkage is hooked up, it should at least have reverse in first gear. Yeah.
Right.
You know, if it doesn't, then there's something wrong inside the transmission. Yeah. You know, you'd have to know whether the pump, front pump, is working and all the above. Yeah.
Right.
You just have to start diagnosing the transmission itself.
I got this 2005
four-wheel
drive.
Okay.
And you smell like you smell gas. I'm thinking it might be my injectors.
It's possible.
But
yeah.
I put some injector cleaner in it, and it loads up like, you know, it runs good, and it'll sit there, and you know, when it'll, like, flow, and you go, it looks like a diesel whenever you kind of get into it.
Yeah, yeah.
The way that diesel smoke.
Right.
Could that mess my injector?
It's very possible. Now, I mean, there's other things that can cause that. I'm going to have to assume it probably has a check engine light on.
I bought the truck used like that.
Yeah.
Check engine light never went off.
Yeah, I would check your have someone check the codes, see what the codes are. You could easily have a mass airflow sensor that's not reading properly, or an O2 sensor that's not reading properly. One of the common things is one of the O2 sensors may be be skewed, and the computer thinks it's running lean, so it's dumping more fuel in to make it richer, and it can't get there, so it just keeps putting more and more fuel in. So that's one of the downsides to not fixing that check engine light, is you don't really know what happened. You know, if something else goes wrong, you know, even if it's something minor that's got the light on.
Yeah. You know, like if it sits in traffic or something, just kind of idle.
Uh-huh.
It'll just, every once in a while, you know, it'll, if you sit there for a period of time, it's idle, and it'll just, like, just wait, and then it kind of starves a little bit when you try to,
yeah.
It ain't got really no power or anything, it just kind of bum, 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 bum,
yeah.
Until it catches the power back up.
Yep.
But here, the last couple of days, when you first crank it up, it'll sound like it coughs.
Right. Yeah, I think you're going to need to start with trying to check codes and find out what's going on there, and that'll give you a kind of a path to run down. But I do appreciate you calling in. We've come up to a hard break.
I appreciate trying to help me out.
All right, no problem. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break and let you hear from our fine sponsors, and we'll be back.
They should, because they figure any place a truck driver eats, the food's just got to be good. So they go in there amongst all them truck drivers, sitting around talking low. They're talking about women and stuff like that, and how fast them trucks will go.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, you've heard the story of the hot rod race that fatal day.
Yeah, and welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor.
Well, listen to the inside story.
Tom Claxton, if you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But let me start you.
You something just happened there on the show a while ago, and I think you could clarify it for us and our listening audience, and that is, I mean, this gentleman had bought this vehicle, and I didn't really understand if he said the check engine light was on or if it wasn't on when he bought the vehicle.
Right.
Now, is it there a way that we can check to see if those particular proper lights and codes are working before that vehicle cranks up? I mean, can't you just turn the ignition on and then those lights will pop on most of these vehicles?
Well,
or where are we at with that?
The pretty much all vehicles do what you call a bulb check.
Okay,
when you first key on. If you just turn the key on, don't crank it up. It will light everything on the dash. And I know, like the General Motors stuff, it'll actually do a gauge sweep. It takes all the gauges, it sweeps them all over to one side,
okay,
and comes
right,
back,
right,
and goes to wherever they should be. You know, all the lights pop on and then they'll go off. The check engine light, of course, it comes on and stays on until you crank it up.
Because, okay.
One of the things it's telling you is, hey, the key's on, but the motor's not running.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So once you crank it up, that light should go off. So, you know, that it will do that.
So we do have some checks and balances here that we could
yeah.
Check out. Now, that being said, how about giving us a real close projection of what we should look at, and should we kind of establish our own mental code of what all these lights come on before, and then every now and then just make sure we look at them and see if everything's working all right?
Well, you know, one thing, of course, if you're buying a vehicle, one of the first things you want to do is you do want to do a bulb check. You want to make sure someone hasn't taken the check engine light.
Right. That's where I was going. That's where I was going, because he just bought this vehicle.
Right.
And that light didn't come on. So might not even have the light hooked.
Yeah, which I think he said the bulb was on and it was on when he got it.
Oh, my bad. Okay, I didn't hear that.
But it's the problem there is that it may have been running fine when he bought it. You know, and it had a code for something simple, an EVAP emission code.
Okay.
That's not going to affect the way it runs,
right.
But it won't let it pass an emissions test. But then all of a sudden something else fails, and, well, you know, the light doesn't come on brighter. It doesn't do anything different. You know,
mm-hmm.
The only time it does anything different is if you have a misfire or something that would be a catalyst damaging condition. Where if it's misfiring, it can actually damage the catalytic converter. So
I heard some of that in his conversation a while ago.
Right.
When he was talking about that smoking like a diesel.
Yeah.
He's fixing to kill some converters.
And that can very easily kill some converters. So, you know, it definitely needs to be checked out. And but that's the downside to run around with a check engine light on all the time is you don't know when something else fails.
Oh, I've had cars in my shop that they'd have – duct tape over them, or a piece of black electrical tape, or they actually had one guy had got he got some fingernail polish from his wife, girlfriend, or somebody's girlfriend, or whatever. But he was had it painted over it so he couldn't see the light on in the dash. You know, I'm going, so that's cool. Yeah, how long has this been on?
There was a time years ago, those old carbureted, computerized cars that it was a chore to keep the check engine light off on them.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of those that the bulbs went away. Of course, you know, General Motors, especially, I know you pulled the bulb out, it wouldn't let it go into closed loop and start adjusting the fuel trim and the timing and everything
it was supposed to. It broke that electrical connection, didn't
it? Well, it said, check engine light's not working, so we're not going to let it do what it's supposed to do.
Right, let me shut it down.
And maybe then they'll go get it fixed.
There you go.
So,
okay.
You know,
but sometimes those things have more brains than we do.
Well, yeah.
That's not saying much. I mean, you know what
that is. Yeah, and there are occasions, and I don't want to give engineers too much credit because there's a whole lot of times I'd like to drag them out behind the building.
Okay? Oh, yeah, yeah. But, I put a couple of dots in certain places about the eyes and nose and face.
Especially when I'm looking at something and it's like, you know, everything's right here where I can get this piece off. If I didn't have this one piece that you can't unbolt,
that you can't find the bolt to.
That there's no reason why it wouldn't unbolt. Why do I have to take the whole dashboard out to get to it? Yeah, but you know it's sometimes there's engineers that I'd like to deal with. But
well, you know, when we have our own personal vehicles and they're out of warranty, as we progress with that and progress with our maintenance, we can modify those things to our satisfaction. But under warranty, we can't do that.
Right. But, you know, I did get, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I will anyway. We had an issue with a transmission on a brand-new truck with a new body style several years back. And, you know, GM wanted to send engineers down here to look at it to see if they could figure out what was going on and make sure there wasn't something in their manufacturing process they needed to modify or whatever, which,
I like that scenario.
And we're talking about an internal – park mechanism in the transmission and the shift cable. It was the internal, and then the shift cable, which would be external.
Right.
They sent two engineers down, and we had our field service engineer with them, you know, who – now the field service engineer, he Intelligent man. And
is he an old
other
tech?
He's an old tech, and he knows the car from bumper to bumper. So
okay.
I'm good with him. The engineers, the one that knew about the part mechanism in the transmission,
right?
He was very versed on that part of the transmission.
Okay.
And the guy that understood the shift cable, he knew the shift cable. There was zero overlap in those two people.
Oh,
yeah,
my
they
God.
Didn't know nothing
well,
else
you know,
about the
you
rest
go.
Of it.
Here
so,
you go. You're know. Messing with engineers.
Well, you know, and they probably sat there and designed the cable and the ends on it and all this kind of stuff, and that was their job. They built that cable, you know, or he built that shift, that part mechanism in the transmission. And he didn't care about the rest of it. That wasn't his project.
That's all. That wasn't on his to-do list.
So that gives me a whole different understanding on how that all works. Because it ain't one guy that sat down and made all this work together. So, but anyway, we'll get off that subject. But we do have a caller online. Let's see who we got. Nope, we lost him.
Yep.
We lost him. But anyway, we do have a text message here. Let's see from
James
from Florida. Is the Chevrolet 8.1 V8 a good, reliable motor? It's a very good motor. It is the largest displacement big block Chevrolet that they built.
What's the cubic inches of that?
496 cubic inches. It came out in the 2500 HDs. They put them in a lot of motorhome chassis.
Oh yeah, those are bad motors.
They're a good workhorse motor.
Mm-hmm.
They have two issues. One is they can't pass a gas station.
Sorry about that.
And two, they do tend to use a little more oil than most motors, but it's pretty much a known that's just the way they are. Most of them are just because they're working so hard. That is having to lubricate everything to where it needs to be.
It's a high torque.
It's not a big horsepower motor, but it is a high torque motor.
It's a workhorse.
But as far as reliability, yes, it's a very reliable motor. We see very few problems with them mechanically. They hold up well. They're not exactly a gas miser, but you know. They're a workhorse motor. That's what they're
for. You brought up a fact about the possible use of oil a little bit more. What would you tell this guy on how to handle that area? Does he need to be checking his oil more often?
Well, just check your oil more often. I mean, it's go back to the days where you check your oil every week or two and
okay.
Keep it filled up. You
know,
don't close the hood and leave it alone for 5,000 miles.
Yeah,
you know, you do have to check them. But we do have a caller online. This caller, you with us?
Yeah.
Hey, what can we do for you?
Can you recommend a radiator flush for me? I think somebody put stop leak and such in this car. Mm-hmm. I had to put a heater core in it.
Yeah. You know, so you feel like you've got the leak stopped.
Yep.
Okay. You know, Presto makes a good radiator flush. There's several other brands, but the biggest thing is to, you know, put the cleaner in, let it flush or let it run through there for several hours.
Would you leave it in for a couple of days?
It wouldn't hurt to leave it in a day or two and run it around and then come back and dump it out. And the biggest part of this whole deal is to get it flush with clear water for a significant amount of time. The absolute best way to do that is to take your upper hose loose and take the thermostat out and just put a hose in the radiator and crank it and run it and let it just continuously pump out of the upper hose onto the ground and, you know, keep feeding it fresh water, you know, until it's absolutely clear. And, you know, if I have any questions, a lot of times while it's still running, I'll stick that upper hose back on there. Don't even put the clamp on it and just keep it topped off with water. Let it circulate that just a little while and then pull it off and put my hose back in the radiator and let it flow through that way.
Make sure the antifreeze is out right before you dump it on the ground.
Yeah. You want to get the antifreeze out first, but, And just keep doing that, and then go back and put a new thermostat in it and top it back off with the antifreeze, and you should be good to go.
That's kind of what I did when I replaced the heater core, and then 6 months' time, the antifreeze turned brown again.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of vehicle is it?
It's an old Crown Vic. It's a 99.
Yeah, yeah.
But the brown is from rust, though, right?
It's probably from oxidation, rust in the cooling system. What kind of antifreeze did you use?
I don't remember now. Probably just Prestone or something like that.
Right.
Be sure to use a good brand.
And the old deck school stuff has been gone for a while,
right,
I believe.
Right.
So hopefully you didn't use that because it tended to turn that color when
brownish,
when
reddish,
got
looking.
Air in it. But
yeah.
It wouldn't hurt to flush again. And sometimes, if you got enough sediment in the bottom of the block, it's hard to get it all out. All you can do is keep flushing until you get good and clean and run it a while. If you have to do it every 6 months for a while.
Yeah.
That may not be a bad thing to do.
It gets down at the bottom of the water jackets and then blocking the cylinder heads.
Yep. And that's what happens is that sediment gets in the bottom of the water jackets, and it's hard to get out of there. The only way to really get it out is take the motor apart, vat it.
Oh, yeah. But they're done all that.
Together. Yep. I've had to do that. But
had a business doing that.
Yep. And that's not something you want to do if you got a good running motor.
No, you need a $20,000 vat.
Yeah.
put the blocks in.
So if it's a little discolored, I wouldn't worry too much about it, but I would definitely, flush it again and see what it does.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Sound like it's time for us to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. And of course, I always like to talk about UJ Chevrolet.
Let's do it.
That's where I work. And
I need to book me an oil change out there. I guess I'll get out there this week and get it changed.
Might as well. I kind of expect that to pick up here shortly because we got graduation, we got summertime.
Well, yeah,
around,
right.
And people are going to be traveling. And
well, I'm ready to get on the road with my car, and that's what I want to do. I want to get out and get the oil changed on it, get safety check, and check the tires and see if they need to be rotated or what have you. So
you can actually buy gas now. I mean, gas,
oh, I know, yeah, but it's a little bit different in the price.
Well, the price went up.
Yeah,
so
it did.
It's a little suspicious that it went up right around this time of year.
Let me
run
into somebody. I got on University yesterday, day before. I got on University Walmart out there by Moffett Road. Was like $2.64.
Yeah,
I come up to next Walmart and stuff, and all it was like $2.69.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "Well, shoot, I just gone over there at Walmart by University in Cottage Hill, $2.84."
Hmm.
I said, "What? What is this deal? This is three Walmart Murphy Oil stations,
right?
Different price on each one of them on one dang thoroughfare,
right?
I said." I'm not going to turn around and go back trade and save $4.04 and 9 cents a gallon.
Right.
I probably don't need 8 gallons anyway. I'm just going to top it off, Yeah.
Right. Right.
Shoot.
Yeah.
That'd be 48.50 cents. I'd burn a gallon of gas.
I'll burn
$3
that up.
Gas. Go ahead and get more. Save 48 cents.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't believe that works.
Yeah, that math doesn't work.
No, that math don't work.
Maybe that's something that's common core math, but you might work on.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I didn't make that class.
Yeah.
I don't know what all that common core stuff is.
Yeah, I'm a little lost on that too. I don't know why you got to go to one point and then come back to to get to 2 plus 2 equals 4.
I had fun getting to the 2 and 2.
Yeah,
how am I going to go past it and come back?
Right. So.
Yeah. Well, let me throw this in about the Fantabulous, the seafood shed. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the lower deck is all covered now. Everything in eating spaces, it's on, even on the back porches and the lower decks are covered. So if you get a little sprinkle of rain or something like that, and or if we get some sun bearing down on us, then we don't have that problem. But they're also, I know that they've got some music playing on the weekends over there. And if you're at Gulf Shores and you want to try something different, when you're going down 59, you cross the big bridge going in towards right at the beach. There's a big Rouse's store on the right, and Walmart is set way back off of the road on the left. If you look over, when you see Rouse's, if you look straight across to your left, you'll see a blue building. Pull in that driveway and go back in there to Peace, Love, and Tacos.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. We had the occasion to go over there Sunday or Saturday. We was up Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were at the veterans meetings and a ceremony at the battleship.
Yeah.
And we left there and went over and checked out the Peace, Love, and Tacos. Now, this is actually owned by Ed's Seafood Shed. They're owners, Pete and Nick,
yeah,
that group. So this is a new venue that's over there, and it's neat. It's great eating. It's reasonable. And it's from fine food. Good service. Awesome. And they got music there. The band was playing while we was over there, so that's cool.
You know, and that whole group is all about, you know, the eating experience. It's not necessarily, you know, the food is the focal point, but it's all about the experience around it,
right?
You know, and the people and the help and the waitresses and the waiters and waitresses and the whole environment
that's
included. So it's
great.
It's a neat experience on everything.
They do an awesome job, and, you know, and that's their goal. I mean, if you've got to make people are supposed to be happy when they eat. And, you know, and have a little toddy for their body, you know. And they have some awesome drink machines and stuff. It's and some great bartenders over at Ed's on the Causeway. And I just enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy the people, and have a blast. Hey, you can't beat the food, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You want some real good food? Go over there and get some of that grilled shrimp and grits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And grits with fried cornbread.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Yes, and one of those adult beverages. Yes.
Well, you know, if you want to make me happy, just some grilled shrimp is good.
The grilled shrimp is all right.
It'll get me there.
It'll get you there. Yep.
Everything else is just a plus.
It's just additions. It's like accessories on a car. Right. You pay extra for that.
Exactly.
This is so cool, though.
Yep. Yep.
But they're doing a good job. But you know, I was wondering about your UJ dealers, if the parts of proliferation and the availability of the parts and all is changing some. Is that getting better?
Yeah and no. You know, we're actually doing pretty well. There are some electronic pieces that we're starting to see some delivery issues with.
Does that go back to the chip?
It goes all back to the chip issue. You know, they're... some of our modules are remanufactured modules, so it doesn't affect them as much because all those chips are already there. They're just having to go in and repair, you know, a piece or two and send them back out.
And then replace a resistor or a broken connection or something.
But some of the new pieces are a little bit different, a little harder to get a hold to sometimes. You know, some pieces that are not remanufactured or whatever. So that creates a whole different scenario.
Right.
You know, and I can't say I really blame them. You know, they're having to supply parts for the repair side of the vehicles. But, you know, their main focus, I guarantee you, is going to be on building the new cars as quick as they can so they can sell them.
If you don't have new vehicles to sell, you don't have nothing to repair.
Right. You know, that's their – you got to keep that flow of new vehicles coming. Or everything else declines.
Right.
I've
seen
it. You
got to get that circle.
Yeah, I've seen it over the years. You know, I've seen manufacturers or dealers that, we got such a following in our service department that even though we're getting rid of this car line, we're still going to do great here and there.
No.
And you do well for a little while.
Oh yeah.
But when you when those customers start going to buy new cars, which they're going to do, you know, and they have to buy them somewhere else, that's where they're going to end up getting them
serviced. That group of people leaves you.
And not all of them will. I mean, some of them will still come back.
You're going to have a small percentage.
But you're going to lose a portion of your clientele.
You're going to lose your profit side of it.
That's just the way it works, you know.
You're going to lose
your
profit side of it.
So, you know, it's, you know, it's a challenging time, but I think we're managing it pretty well, better than some. I'm sure there's people that are doing it better than us, but, you know, I think we're doing a pretty decent job of managing it and getting the vehicles in and out.
Well, you got a good group, and at this time you have a complete group of technicians.
Yeah, yeah. We could still use some oil change guys. But
so
other than that,
basic maintenance?
Basic maintenance guys, you know, oil change, rotate, tire balance, you know, kind of thing. You know, but other than that,
so you
I've
have
got
some boatmen out there. If anybody's listening, maybe they got
if
some
listening,
kid or grandkid or whatever needs a job.
We do need two oil change.
All right,
lube techs right now. So
okay.
It's
and that's not a minimum.
Not a minimum
job.
Wage job. You know, it's it can pay decent wage.
Good.
You know, so it's you can make decent money doing it. It's
can they get a start there and maybe move up into be a technician?
I mean,
that's why we
tend to be lacking on our lube side, because we try and get them trained and get them some experience and move them up into the shop and keep that train rolling. If you don't, you end up with, you know, everybody retired, and guess what? You have nobody to fill any seats, you know? You know, some of our guys are about like me, getting a little old.
Ooh, so, oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Ooh. Not as old as you. But I mean,
okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I am like dirt, man.
Yeah.
When I was born, dirt was still white. It was clean.
Right.
Got dirty since I was born.
Got dirty.
I kept kicking up the clods, you know what I mean?
Since or because of. I'm not sure which, but, yeah, it's, yeah. Yep. Sounds like it's time for us to get out of here tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show, and I will see you next week.
And to all of our veterans and first responders, God bless you all. Appreciate what you do. A big hoorah. Need to take my baby for a ride.